Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Hey, Women in WP listeners. Before we get to the show, we quickly want to tell you about a great opportunity. One of our favorite plugins, WP All Import, is looking to hire a customer support representative. The position is 30 hours a week, $30 an hour, completely remote, and has a flexible schedule. WP All Import started in 2011 and now has grown to a great team of people distributed all over the world, and they support over 12,000 customers across the globe. This position is in English and requires some technical know-how. Check out all the job requirements and detailed instructions on how to apply at wpallimport.com/hiring. Go apply and then let them know that Women in WP sent you. Now let's get to our show.
Welcome to the show. I'm Angela Bowman.
I'm Tracy Epps.
And I'm Amy Masson.
Our guest today is Francesco Marano, who is WordPress Community Manager with SiteGround and a WordPress Core Community Contributor.
Hello, everyone. Buonasera.
If you've listened to this show before, you know we like to start off each episode by asking our guests about their journey into WordPress. How did you get started?
So, in WordPress as a software, I started using it in 2008. I built myself a mommy blog. My son was 2 years old, and I thought the whole world needed to see his pictures, of course, a very, you know, like it would normal. And then I moved to WordPress.org because he didn't want to model for me anymore so much. So I found that tweaking the website was also a lot of fun to keep myself busy. And I started tweaking my website. I started tweaking my blog. And to my big surprise, people asked me to do the same for them. And they were also ready to pay me for that. So that's how my career as a WordPress professional started. It was a lot of trial and error, I must say. But it was also a lot of fun because I worked with a lot of women that were also transitioning from back to a professional life after having kids. So it was a very, very specific niche, and I really enjoyed working with them. So that's how I started.
And I also had a mommy blog because everybody, of course, wanted to see pictures of my babies.
Of course.
So when you first started transitioning into getting paying work from people, what kind of jobs were they? What kind of websites were they?
Everything. I took everything. First of all, my life at the time, I was working as an administrative manager. So, you know, being a freelancer was very far from my day-to-day life. And because also I didn't really have many skills, I felt a bit weird getting paid for this. But actually, because I did actually have some pre-existing skills because I took CSS and HTML classes like 10 years before. So actually the products were not too bad. But at the beginning, I was really, really not just focused on making WordPress websites. So, you know, if you came to me and be like, hey, can you also do my logo? I would be like, sure, because I did 2 years of graphic design. Or can you manage my social media? Well, why not? You know, so I took a little bit of everything, and it took me a while to transition out of this phase of doing everything and also doing everything for cheap, to be honest. So it took me a couple of years to raise my profile a little bit more. It was a bit easier at the time, we're talking about 10 years ago, because there weren't as many WordPress. So after I quit my mommy blog, I started blogging about my job, and I started blogging about WordPress. And at the time, there weren't many blogs about WordPress in Italy, at least. And basically, none of them were run by a woman. So it was a bit easier for me than at the time to change and improve, because I was very visible in that specific niche that I picked. And also my skills got better. So I was able, you know, in time to ask for more money, to say no to more words that I said yes to. But at the beginning, I really took everything.
I feel like I had a very similar journey where I just was like, well, yeah, I'll do that too. And I'll do that. And I'll do that, whatever. And you are organizing, because we've talked a little bit about this WordPress release and heading that up. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this?
So that was also... I think all these things kind of happened in my life without me really looking to make those changes, which is probably great because it takes away a lot of the pressure from, you know, I have to decide on something, I have to do something. So basically, in the same way that I started becoming a WordPress website maker, I became a WordPress contributor by giving a talk about websites for freelancers at a freelancing event in 2015, something like that. And in the audience, there was someone that was already contributing to WordPress. So I was like, okay, so you seem to know stuff about WordPress. Why don't you contribute to it? I'm like, because I'm not a developer. And I was like, ah, again with the story of the developers. It's not that only developers can contribute to WordPress. At the time, there were already like 14 teams. And I was like, why don't you start with translations? Which, you know, doesn't require a difficult setup. It doesn't really... It requires you to want to make the product better for everyone who's using it. So that was my mindset anyway. So I started translating WordPress into Italian. Now, at the time, Italy didn't really have a community. And so the very few people that contributed to WordPress and, you know, wrote on the blogs and stuff like that, we all kind of knew each other. And so on the same summer, we decided that now that we had one person contributing to Polyglots, one person contributing to Core, one person, like five people, we were a community and we needed to become bigger. So we started organizing things. And we organized the contributor day, and that's how we got a lot of new people on board. And then the year after that, we organized Work in Torino, which was the first, which is my hometown, and it was the first WordCamp in Italy for like 3-4 years. I can't remember. And then I switched. So I went from Polyglots to community, and I started being a community organizer, organizing the meetup in my hometown, organizing the work camp, and then I wanted to do more. So I volunteered for the community team as an active member, which we call deputies, which is a very American thing that I basically never heard of before. I got the gist after they explained to me what I was supposed to do. So I started, you know, vetting applications, being present during the meetings, and I started working very closely with Andrea Middleton and Josefa Hayden. And about a year ago, I would say, Core started reaching out to all the other teams and say, hey, we want to increase the diversity of Core because we don't want just developers and only male developers being involved in this. Also because a release is kind of a big process and we need all sorts of skills. So is there anyone there in any of your team wanting to contribute, you know, in any capacity to a minor release? And I was like, sure, why not? You know, I mean, I kind of expected to start with a minor release. And then I don't know how I became the co-lead of a major release.
Isn't that what every woman could say at some point in their life?
I mean, so for months it was like, okay, you know, and every once in a while I was popping into Core and I was like, I'm still fine doing a minor release if you need me. And they were like, yeah, we're putting together the next one. And then it didn't align. And then Josepha just pinged me and say, and what if it was a major instead of a minor? And you get a lot of support and you have an amazing team. And then I was like, I mean, I trust this woman. She taught me a lot regarding the community team and the community, the WordPress community, that is obviously not just the community team. So I'm going to say yes. And that's how I did it. And then somehow I also found myself doing another one after that. But now I'm done.
Well, this is a recurring theme we've always seen with like people like, women, we like, oh, well, there's a need here. So we just
do it. Yeah. But to be fair, I think so. It's a lot less stressful than I think people imagine it to be because it is a big team. So up until 5.0, 5.1, I can't remember. Basically, there was one release lead. A deputy, again, apparently we're very fond of this work. And there was some co-lead, but the teams were like 2-3. And for 5.3, I think we were, 15, probably we were a bit less. And everyone was very focused on something specific. So it was not one person having to keep an eye on everything, but everyone keeping an eye on their thing, cross-communicating, of course, and collaborating. And then my role as the coordinator was basically to get the information from everyone and, you know, see if there were any roadblocks, if there were some things that weren't going as planned, if there was something that needed a bit more help, more eyes, and then some admin stuff like posting the agenda for the weekly chat and hosting the weekly chat and stuff like that. But honestly, there's a lot of support. So this is why also I did also the second one, 5.4, because I knew that not only there was all the support, I could also learn more to be myself a support for someone else in the upcoming future. Tracy knows it because I pinged her about it. it has been advertised by Josepha that 5.6, which is the last release of 2020, will be female only. No, I don't want to say female only. Female led release. So we are working now. I won't be coordinating the releases, but I will keep working with Core to make this possible. And so we're starting now working on 5.5, but we're already moving forward with 5.6 because we want all the women that will be involved in that to ride along 5.5 and see how things are going and see if it fits them, if they want to do it. And I hope they want. We had an amazing response to this. Like, we got 90 people pinged us and said, yes, I'm interested. And it was like, now we have the opposite problem. We have too many people, so we have to think how to organize this, but it's never enough. I mean, the more the merrier, I think. So that's how I went from mommy blogger to release co-lead, basically.
Well, there's always this, you know, oh, you're a core contributor if you contribute code. But like you said, when you're trying to organize that many people, I can't even imagine doing that. Like, that to me is way beyond my skill set. But that is very valuable. And so I wish we could change. I think it is changing. It's starting to change this mindset of, no, it's every single piece is just as important as every other piece. So everything should be celebrated and rewarded as much.
So actually everyone is kind of already on board with that. It's just me being very uncomfortable with compliments and being very uncomfortable with the roles that I'm not 100% sure I'm really good at. So, you know, there is this interesting...
Spoiler alert, you are.
But, you know, there is this very interesting article that you're probably all familiar with from the Harvard Business Review that says that men applies to job if they have like 20% of the requirement, and women wait to have at least like 95%. So,
yeah, it's true. Or I've seen it on Twitter. Like, okay, to balance it out, men apply for something below what you would. Women apply for something above what you would.
Yeah, and the other thing is that it's very common for women to underplay our wins. And so actually everyone in the core team treats me as a core contributor. I'm the one that has a hard time believing that I'm a core contributor to the CMS that is most widely used in the world. So, I think I'm also trying to downplay it a little bit so I don't feel the pressure too much and the responsibilities. I'm like, nah, I'm not really doing anything, you know, I'm just asking people for a status report, because then when I go to the counter and I see, like when we launched 5.4, we were like something like less than 300,000 installs away from 50 million installs of WordPress. So I have to, you know, not think about that too much. So I'm like, no, I'm just there to help a little bit. It's, you know.
Well, you said, you know, oh, it's just me. Everybody else is, you know, fine with it. But I just don't think that's true. I have been to every single WordCamp US that we've had, and I have not once attended a contributor day. And I think a lot of that has to do with feeling like, you know, oh, I'm not a coder or programmer to that level, and I don't, you know, I would be, you know, a fake. I'd be a fraud. And so I just haven't gone. So it's not just you.
Yeah. So it's funny because actually WordPress, let's say the contributor experience is made up of something like 18 teams right now. And I think just half of them require you to know how to develop. All the others don't really need it. There's a, you know, there's the community team where basically you have to be willing to grow your local community. That's basically the people that contribute to community to that. And then there is, for example, marketing. So, you know, if you have any interest in copywriting, promoting, and anything like marketing in the very big and wide sense, you can contribute to that. There is training, which is a team that I think doesn't get enough visibility. At least I don't see it in my radar so much. And it's a shame because the training team, for example, what they do, they put together a study plan, lesson plans for people that want to teach WordPress. So it's so valuable. Like, you know, next time you can teach that in your community, in your kids' school, whatever. And the test team is... that needs a lot of help in testing stuff. And then there's the documentation, which is also doesn't require you to be a developer. So there are so many opportunities.
And the documentation, I feel like it helps if you're not a developer, because I've read the documentation where it's written for, you know, from that lens where I'm like, I don't know where this, I don't understand any of this. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Design is also an amazing team because it's very, very much about different skills. So design is made of UX people, UI people, graphic designers, developers, front-end developers. You know, it really, really brings a lot of skills together. So I think so. WordCamp Europe is going to be a virtual event this year. And up until a month ago, I was part of the team and I was actually in charge of the team that was organizing Contributor Day. Then when we decided to move to virtual, because also of the situation in Italy, I opted out from the organizing team because it's kind of hard right now to keep up with everything. So Timi, I cannot pronounce his last name because it's from Finland, so it's basically impossible for anyone who's not Finnish to say his last name, but look for Sipis Timi. He's in the community team, he's taking over, and he's organizing a contributor day, a virtual contributor day. And I think it's going to be so interesting because probably it's going to be a good occasion to onboard the people that might feel a bit out of place at a contributor day at WorkMPUS, because you know, there are also all the big names, all the big shot developers, and you're like, oh, you know, I'm just a girl from Italy, so I don't really fit in. But actually, and that's also another thing, this is also self-inflicted, because no one ever made me feel out of place in any of the contributor days I ever attended, or, you know, any WordCamp or any team where I just pinged and say, hey, I need some help with this thing. So this is really self-inflicted and we should probably stop doing it. So Amy, please sign up for the virtual contributor day at WorkMPU Europe. And I promise you that once the contributing bug hits you, then actually you have a problem because you will want to contribute a lot more than you are able to.
That is 100% it. I went to the contributor day in Philadelphia and it was my first WordCamp US. And I have a hard time with the big conferences. Like, I feel like I'm trying to make a connection, and often, you know, like with that, I knew some people and I was there with some people, but I tend to, after that full day, just want to go cry. It's interesting. And so that morning of contributor day, I was just crying and I'm like, oh, I don't want to go, but I was just going to make myself go because I just felt like, okay, I don't want to just leave this conference in tears. And it's just a weird thing. And maybe it's more that I'm a little more introverted than I'm ever willing to acknowledge. So I went to Contributor Day and I was so nervous. And I went on to Julie Cole's training team, the one you're saying doesn't get enough attention. And I'll tell you what, it is much easier to go to Contributor Day than to the big conference, because you sit at a table with maybe 8 or 10 or 12 people. They're now all your new best friends. Some of them might even be somewhat famous. And then they're like one guy who just went through a rough time. He was practically in tears. And he's someone who's super famous. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he's having a crisis right now. And it's just so humanizing and so community building. And you're right. The challenge isn't so much that you're going to feel like you don't belong. The challenge is it's like, you know, like a contagion. Like you just get this bug and you're like, I can't shake it. Now it's like being roped into the mafia or something. Like you're put on a Slack channel. You are so sucked in. It's like they're looking for warm bodies.
It's a Ponzi scheme. I always say it as like, bring a friend and then give them some work.
Hi, Women in WP listeners. This is Angela with a quick note from our sponsor, Malcare. The thing I like most about Malcare is how simple it is to use. Unlike other security plugins that have an array of confusing options that you have to figure out whether or not to turn on and if they will break your site, is you simply install and activate Malcare. That's it. It blocks brute force attacks to your site instantly and protects your site with a firewall. Regular security plugins are quite resource intensive because if they provide any sort of scanning, the scanning happens directly on your hosting server, which can really slow down your site. Malcare, on the other hand, copies your site encrypted to their dedicated cloud servers, so all of the scanning processes occur in the cloud, ensuring that Malcare never impacts the performance of your site. Malcare's regular, deep, clean scanning of your files and database can dynamically detect even the most complex malware. This ensures that you're the first to know if your site or client's site has been hacked. Using Malcare's one-click instant removal tool makes your site malware-free in minutes at a fraction of the price of other security services. To get started with Malcare and take advantage of their expert team of security support, please visit malcare.com Women in WP for 10% off your first year of protection, or see the show notes for a link. Now back to the show.
Well, all three of us were planning to be at WordCamp Europe this year, and I was very excited. And so Of course, we're all very sad about not being able to go to Europe. And so I would like to, it's not WordPress related, but find out more about what life in Italy is like right now. I know we used to hear a lot about Italy right when things were starting to get crazy here. And then now the news isn't reporting on Italy at all. And so I just feel like we're not really hearing about anything about how things are around the world. We're only hearing about what it's like here. And I really want to know what Italy's like right now.
Yeah, I think that's very common in every country, by the way. When this all started at the end of 2019 in China, you know, it was like, oh, it's far away, but also the scale is so massive, but we're so far from that. So, you know, it kind of, it's not really your problem in a way. And then when it got to Italy, because Italy was the first country outside of China that was hit very hard, then of course, you know, it was news because no one else at the same time was hit as hard. Unfortunately, from then, a lot of things have changed. And now the US are actually the most affected country in the world.
We're number one.
Yay.
Yay.
And Spain, which was kind of, Spain is very, very, very worrisome because at the beginning they were like 2 weeks behind us, but now not only they caught up with us, but they are also went over our numbers. So the situation in Italy, unfortunately, is the same. We are still in lockdown. Personally, I put myself in self-isolation at the beginning of March because things were starting to look really scary. And I didn't need the government to tell me to be careful. And then basically a couple of 10 days after that, actually the government had to, you know, intervene and tell everyone to stay home. So right now we're really locked in. We're allowed to leave the house to buy groceries for necessities. So if I have to go to a medical appointment, or if I have to go to the pharmacy, or, you know, a bulb explodes, then I am allowed to go. We are not allowed to go into parks, which is, I think, the hardest part because, especially for teenagers, I have a 14-year-old son and he's, you know, really, really not enjoying this continuous lockdown in the house. I don't mind it. I've been working from home for 10 years. So I'm used to my universe being as big as this bedroom, basically, except for when I'm going to conferences. That's basically my life, is either being by myself in my home or going to conferences with other hundreds of people. So in terms of how my everyday life has been affected, is not. But at the same time, there is a nagging feeling behind you that says, oh, do I need to go out for milk, really? Because I personally am scared. And I think a lot of people are scared because the growth is exponential and there's a lot of people without symptoms. So, you know, it kind of feels a little bit like, okay, I'm going to get the milk, but maybe I'm coming back with something else as well. Numbers are very uneven. We cannot, and this is, I think, a problem that a lot of countries have, but in Italy, actually, something that has been discussed heavily in the last few days. We don't actually know how many people have been affected because we do the... how do you call the exam? The exam that they do.
Oh, the swab.
Yeah. So we call it tampone for some reason, which is tampon. I don't know why. Yeah,
makes sense because it's a cotton swab.
No, but actually they do a blood exam, but they still call it tampon. I don't know why, but anyway. So it turns out that there's a big problem with nursing homes. This is what you call the places where elderlies can't live. So there's a big problem because high mortality rate, but because they didn't do the test to everyone, you know, some deaths have been marked as non-coronavirus related, but they are. So it's not clear. It's not very clear what the real numbers are.
How accessible are tests to you? Like if you started coughing... Not at all. So, because as Americans, we're really pissed off right now at our government blaming them that we don't have tests, but it's good to hear from other people their experience.
So we also test only people that have symptoms and only people that have like a lot of them. So for example, if I had a fever right now and I would call the number that we're supposed to call, they would be like, oh, keep checking what's going on and if you also develop a cough and if how is it going tomorrow and stuff like that. So actually get tested basically when it's 99% sure that you have coronavirus.
Yeah, like here you have to be hospitalized, admitted to the hospital before you'll get a test. And my friend just got over COVID and they wouldn't test her. Because she wasn't hospitalized, she could manage it.
Yeah, that's also no. We can get tested also if we're not hospitalized, but it's still not really readily available. There are some regions. Italy is divided in regions, so we don't have like a federal government like you do. But regions do have some autonomy on certain matters. So, for example, Veneto, which is the region completely east of Italy where Venice is, they are now trying to test more heavily and widely, so they can catch more people, because that's exactly the problem, that a lot of people don't have any symptoms. So, you know, we keep our lives and despite the fact, for example, that I'm been self-isolating for over 6 weeks now, I still go to the supermarket once a week. So if I'm asymptomatic, I could be spreading that without even knowing it. The difference, I think the main difference with the US is that our national health system is public. So once you do think that you have this, you will go to the hospital and seek for treatment because you're not afraid that this will cost you too much.
What's amazing is I'm on a plan that is an HMO in Colorado called Kaiser Permanente. And they sent an email to all of us saying that they will cover all coronavirus testing as well as treatment for free, and it will not hit our deductible or copays, which is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, that is not the case for me.
Me either.
I mean, that's one of the things I complain about with our healthcare system is, you know, this is going to be perpetuated for people that have really shitty insurance like I do, because if I got it, I wouldn't go to the doctor.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go get tested because how much is that going to cost me? How much is treatment going to cost me? Can I just ride it out at home while I am also in turn spreading it to people around me? It's a public health problem. And, you know, I can afford to go to the doctor, but my insurance isn't going to pay any of it. So I just don't. And how many people are like that in the US or don't have insurance at all?
I'm seeing even just in Milwaukee County, a very clear correlation between race, income, and, you know, all of that. And surprisingly, you know, oh, if you don't have really good health insurance, and now the cases are just ballooning in those areas, and it's really scary.
It is. This is one thing that obviously it's very foreign to me, the concept of not having a public health system as a European and as an Italian, because we take this so for granted. And I have to say, this is the second time in a very short period of time in my life that I'm very thankful for that, because my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer 2 years ago and she got exceptional treatment and she didn't pay a dime. You know, they even gave her So all the treatment was free and all the medicines, and they even gave her this parking for free for when she went do the chemo. And, you know, now with this in Italy, I know that, God forbid, someone needs to go to the hospital and get intubated and everything, it's not going to cost us anything. And the medical staff are really doing exceptional work with not the best of situation, because at the same time, we do have the public health system, but not all hospitals are equipped, not everyone received everything that they needed. So, for example, my region, we're supposed now all to wear masks, but we cannot find masks in shops. So luckily for me, SiteGround sent me from Bulgaria 10 masks, 10 reusable masks. So, you know, I gave them to my dad, my mom, my son, my ex-husband, my boyfriend. I just sent them out to everyone. But, you know, so I don't know. It's obviously it's a very complicated issue, and it's something that even countries that have public health and had some form of preparation for this are not really prepared for the scale of this. So this is very worrisome everywhere. And Italy is kind of a big country. We're 60 million people. So it's a small, but a lot of people. I see the same in the UK. My boyfriend lives in the UK, and they also, first of all, they underestimated the situation in the beginning. Like I think we all did, let's face it, because, you know, it's easy to say, oh, Boris Johnson said that we all should get sick, so we develop herd immunity. But it's 2 weeks before, the mayor of Milano was posting stuff like, Milano doesn't stop. And that's when the shit hit the fan, because everyone was going out and like, Milano doesn't stop. We're going to go and have our aperitivo. We're going to go work. And then, oh my God, Lombardia, which is the region of Milano, everyone is sick. And I was like, oh, duh, you know? So it's kind of, I think everyone is becoming an expert in hindsight. So it's like, oh yeah, I told you so, but we did absolutely the same thing in Italy. I completely underestimated this. This is something that it was, you know, a time in my life where I really had to come face to face with my ignorance. And when it was just in China and my prejudice and whatever, because when it was in China, it was only in China, and then it started spreading to Asia, and Work Camp Asia was supposed to happen, and they canceled Work Camp Asia. And I was like, why? There are only 5 cases, and I'm in Italy, and what's going to happen to me? And 2 weeks later, I'm like with a mask and gloves whenever I need to go and take the pulse, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to die. And this is also something incredible to witness, like how our perception of this thing is actually hitting us just when it's really close to us. And I don't know, it is a weird time.
I found it interesting watching everybody kind of come to the realization of how bad it is. Like ours was in middle of March, we had spring break planned, and I went from, oh, I'm still going to Florida, to 2 days later, like panic shopping and buying food for my freezer. And I had other friends that were like, I'm still going to Florida. What's wrong with you? And then, you know, a couple days later, they were doing the same thing.
Yes, that was exactly the same with Work Camp Asia. You know, like people were like, oh, even if it's canceled, I'm going to go to Asia anyway because I paid for my ticket. And they were like, no. I'm not going to do that. And it's the same with Italy. I was in the UK at the end of February. So the day I flew, I stayed there for a week. The day I flew out, everything was kind of normal. The authority was telling us to use masks only if we were infected. So I went to the hospital, I went to the airport, and I saw a lot of people with masks, and I tweeted out something like, oh, I so want to ask them if they're infected, because they can, you know, it was clear that we need to put this only if we're infected and everything. 1 week later, I'm on the plane from London to Torino, I'm wearing a mask, I'm cleaning the seat around me, and that's when it really hit me how serious it was. I got to Torino, to the airport, and the Red Cross was there taking temperature for everyone, and there was an isolation tent. So if you had a fever for any reason in the world, you were put in quarantine directly. And I'm like, oh shit. This is real.
Unfortunately, pandemics are a little hobby of mine. And so I saw it coming in January, and then I tweeted, all right, Facebook post in February, like third week of February, hey, everyone needs to be prepared to spend several weeks isolated at home. And my friends are like, what are you talking about? This isn't worse than the flu. And I'm like, no, it's coming, and you need to shop and you need to be at home now.
Several weeks would be lucky at this point. I think it's going to be a year.
We've been extended to after like end of May for us.
That's what adjusted for me, is I realized this is an 18-month process, that there was no hiding.
So in terms of what is going to happen, we're kind of living day by day. So they keep pushing the deadline for the reopening. And that is actually the thing that I really makes me anxious, very anxious, is not knowing when this is going to end. Like if you tell me now you have to do this for 2 years, I'm like, all right, I can take it. It's 2 years. There's a deadline. I'm going to organize my life through this. But what really is causing me major anxiety, now a little bit less because I think we're transitioning in a new normal. So we're now more accepting of what is happening. But the first 2 weeks when I really realized what was happening, I was like, you know, I have to change my whole life. And so my boyfriend lives in the UK, so I haven't seen him in 6 weeks, and I don't know when I'm going to see him. My dad doesn't live in my city, so I also haven't seen him, I don't know, because when I left for London at the end of February, I've already haven't seen him for a couple of weeks. So it's now over 2 months, and I don't know where I'm going to see him. And the schools, it was just a disaster. So they, you know, they closed the school for 3 days. Then they extended it for a week. Then they extended it for 2 weeks. Now there is no date. And kids are home. They closed parks, which is very hard. I don't know if I was cut off before or after.
Yeah, no, they also closed the parks here too, just recently too. Yeah.
Yeah, and we heard that part in your poor kid. Like, I just, especially if you're in a space where you don't have your own backyard, or you know what I mean, like a garden space or something where they can just go out and let off some steam. That must be so hard.
That is very hard. That is very hard. And it's also where, and I don't know if it's the same in the US, but in Italy, we're very much about interpreting things. So the government issued this decree that we cannot leave, unless, you know, we have to go to the supermarket or stuff like that, we cannot leave the house and go farther than 200 meters, which I have no idea what it is in feet. Probably, no, I don't know. Anyway, we'll figure it out. And so, but it's basically a block of a small city, not of New York, right? So I'm like, okay, does this mean that I can go downstairs with my kid once a day and go back and forth in the block just so he can, you know, move his leg and I can move my leg, or not? So these things are very unclear. So this is where people interpret. Either they go out and they're like, I mean, I'm not going to stay put for such a long time. And there are people like us, which has been staying indoor for 6 weeks now and go out once. Like, I am now at this stage where I'm became a master meal planner and meal prepper. And I have a super good system for shopping. So I think I will be able to go 2 weeks without going out. But do I want to go 2 weeks without going out? Like, you know, it's, so yeah, it's, I don't know.
You know, and I had a very similar, that whole open-endedness of it is where I really kind of just, it hit me the hardest. And, you know, I have, you know, I have a yard, I have a space and, you know, to move around, but I have no people to interact with. Literally no one, just me and my cat. And so that was, you know, that's been hard. I mean, that's hard. Mental health is hard when you work remotely anyway. But the work you recommend, you have some sort of interaction, and now you're like, well, no, no more interaction. And one of the things that, you know, we've been, at least in Milwaukee, is like, well, what about all the small businesses? I love to hear, like, how are the small businesses in such, in Italy, like, surviving, or doing for these things, this time?
It's very different, and it depends what's your business. So anyone that had an opportunity to translate their business somehow online is doing it. I am very proud to say this, and I'm not giving you a sales speech, but I really think SiteGround did something really great here. Since the very beginning, we gave a very, very massive discount to Italy, to clients that were coming from Italy and from Spain, like $1 for 3 months of hosting, because we thought that people will need to go online, and they will need to go online quickly, and they don't have the cash flow right now to commit to a 300 euros a year hosting plan, or, you know, all this kind of stuff. So that's, for example, one. And we started doing webinars, and we started writing articles, and we're not the only host who did this. Obviously, a lot of hosts, and I really like seeing this, how it's going in the industry right now, that anyone that has a way to help is doing it by giving, you know, producing content, opening office hours, giving discounts and stuff like that. So I think everyone that has had any chance to transform their business and pivot quite quickly, they did it. Others cannot. So all businesses are closed except for the primary necessities.
Essential services. Do you have restaurants? Can restaurants do takeout or delivery, or no?
They can do only delivery. They cannot do takeout. Bars were what we call bar, you call a cafe. So cafes were closed. Were the first to be closed. Clothing shops. So if I go, I live in this neighborhood, which is kind of an old school, not low class, but working class Italy, very much working class Italy, but like, you know, people that were working in the Fiat factories in the 50s. So it's full of shops and it's full of people. It's very, very lively. And there is this stretch of a road, again, probably 200, 300 meters, I don't know, that's full of small shops. So there's two butchers, there's I don't know, like three bakeries, and the makeup shop, and then there's two ladies that sells this word is so difficult, haberdashery, I think you say this,
like hats stuff. And stuff, yeah, haberdashery, like, oh, the sewing supplies and things like that?
Sewing supplies and stuff like that. So, you know, so basically they all shut down except for the butcher, the bakers, and the supermarkets. Everyone else has shut down. So we have a system in Italy where certain industries can get, if you are production factory of some form, even if you're like, my ex-husband is he's a pasta maker, He works in this small shop where they make fresh pasta every day, and they sell the pasta, but they also have a small restaurant. So they closed for a while, and the state is paying 80% of your salary. There's a special fund for that, which is like an unemployment, but not really, because you keep being employed by your employer, but you get your salary through the state and you get 80% of that. Now they are reopening this week and they will only do delivery. Takeout is also not very common in Italy. We either sit at a restaurant or we do delivery. Takeout is not so common. Delivery has been working very well. A lot of all the Uber Eats, Just Eat, Deliveroo, all these companies are, you know, they lowered the rates for delivery. They made sure to give to all the couriers gloves and masks and stuff like that. So it really depends, but there are a lot of people who are losing their jobs and, you know, their livelihood because their company doesn't have the cash flow to pay them, and they are not in one of those industries where they can get the salary paid by the state for this period. So those businesses are struggling and they're closing. I read, so last week they showed the numbers of China national, I don't know all those words in English, how you call the national production income and stuff like that, and they're like down 9% of their economy, and I think the same is happening here. So it's going to have a very long tail. I mean, even if in May, they say that in May, at the beginning of May, they will loosen up a little bit of the restrictions, but obviously it's not going to go, hey, let's go party in the street on the May 3rd. For example, schools, it's almost certain that they will. So in Italy, kids go to school until mid-June and then they go back in mid-September. We have a 3 months holiday. And so it's basically for sure that they're not going to go back to school this year. And also in September, probably when they're going to start, they're not going to start 100% in class, but they will probably do a mix of online and in person, and, you know, maybe having ninth grade go on Mondays, 10th grade go on Tuesday and stuff like that. So,
yeah, I think they closed schools completely here for the rest of the year. But for Wisconsin, I don't know if this is everywhere else. Liquor stores are an essential service, so they're still open. Oh. So
it is essential. I am drinking tea because I also have to record a session for WorkCamp Santa Clarita after. But normally at this time, I would be drinking a gin and tonic.
Perfect.
Okay, that sounds delicious. As soon as we're done with this, I'm going to go have a cocktail. Wow. It's been so interesting to talk to you about everything from, you know, WordPress contributing to life in Italy under coronavirus. Before we go, can you tell everybody where they can find you online?
Mostly on Twitter. So I'll be honest that I'm not very present on social media right now because it's causing me major anxiety, and I don't really need that. But occasionally you will find me on Twitter as Francesca Marano, and you can find me on the SiteGround blog in English, because my blog is only in Italian, so I don't think it's very interesting. Also, I'm a terrible blogger. I never write. So if you want to chat with me, would definitely be Twitter or on Slack. I'm Francina, which is Francina. Sì, Francina.
And we will put all of that in the show notes.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or join our Facebook group. Not already subscribed? Well, you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes.
Did you know that you could help support the Women in WPU podcast? If you head on over to our Patreon page, you'll find additional content and some cool perks if you want to set up a monthly donation of a dollar or more. And finally, you can find all show notes, links, and transcriptions at our website at womeninwp.com. Until next time.